Bonus episode.
Also cursed episode.
Yeah, this episode was not meant to be.
We had such a hard time getting this episode off the ground.
Oh my God. Oh my gosh.
Everything that could go wrong went wrong.
It's a backup of a backup of a backup.
Uh-huh. I mean, at least we didn't have to re-record.
That's true. Oh my gosh, that is always the worst.
Hopefully I didn't just jinx it. So.
Damn it, Sammy. Now we have to start all over.
So first things first, let's preface the happy Halloween.
First order of business, guys. Happy Halloween.
Second order of business, a trigger warning.
Yes.
Big
yes. Second order of business.
Fat trigger warning. Because
holy cow, yo.
This is we're covering a true crime serial killer in this episode. And we don't normally cover that. We normally are very lighthearted and fun and talk about mythical creatures and weird conspiracies. This episode is going to be kind of dark and very gory. It covers a lot of things that are, you know, like mutilation and stuff that if you are not comfortable listening to this episode, please, we will not be mad at you. If you don't listen to it, we will not be upset or offended. Please think of yourself. If this is not the kind of thing that you want to listen to, just don't. It's going to be pretty dark. This was a script that we wrote for a crossover with What's in Your Hometown, but they ended up, we didn't coordinate with them, and they ended up talking about this on a different episode of theirs. So we had
a bonus script.
We had the script, so we were like, well, we don't want this to go to waste, so we'll make this our Halloween episode. So, but yeah, so that's,
so do look out for the, our crossover with them soon. We are working on that and, the cogs are turning and, we'll get that out for you guys soon.
Yeah.
And that'll be really lots of fun. So, and cause we want to support them just like they supported us.
Yes.
So, but yeah, so, but you know, just as respectfully that we asked, you know, if you don't want to listen, you know, go ahead and tune out. This is a bonus episode. That's the point of a bonus episode.
Bonus episode.
But, but yeah, but if you want to join us, hey, thanks for sticking around.
Yep.
Hey, happy Halloween.
Happy
Halloween. Let's get
spooky. Let's get spooky. All right.
Okay, so I'm going to kick things off. So we are, you guys may be familiar with the East Area Rapist, who was really in the news quite a bit around a couple years, like maybe a year and a half ago now, because he was caught finally because of some DNA testing and it, you know, everybody got it all linked together and stuff, and like justice is kind of being served because the guy's so old that by the time he goes to trial and is actually convicted of anything, he will probably be dead or have no cognition of what's going on. But that's not the point of what we're talking about. We are not going to break down the East Area Rapist because everybody has done that, including even lots of people. So we are actually going to talk about another, probably lesser known, a serial killer from the Sacramento area, because part of what hit so close to home about the East Area Rapists is that these are places that are like, I drive by every day.
Yeah.
These are streets I drive by every day.
We've seen these places all the time.
Exactly.
So.
Same with the Sac Vampire, if you may or may not know about him. So now you are going to know about him and you're going to wish you didn't.
Buckle up, folks. This is a bumpy ride ahead. But the
if
Sacramento,
you are currently
the Sacramento exactly. Vampire, he earned that name.
If you are currently eating, I would take a break for a while because we're going to get gross.
It's going to get messy.
Okay. Between December of 1977 and January 1978, over the course of a month, he killed between six people in three murders in Sacramento, or killed six people in three murders in Sacramento, each murder getting more and more gruesome. So prepare yourself for some nightmare fuel. There are lots of theories about his motives, including trying to prevent Nazis from turning his blood into powder via poison they had planted beneath his soap dish. But it all pretty much boils down to this dude was really sick.
Really, really sick.
So Richard Trenton Chase was born in Santa Clara on May 23rd, 1950 to a strict family. Santa Clara is about 2 hours or so from Sacramento, and it's a tiny little area near San Jose, and it's pretty easy to miss if you can find stuff like the Winchester Mystery House there. That's part of what Santa Clara is really popular for. He was subjected to lots of physical abuse by his father, and his mother really wasn't much help either. By age three, the Chases had bought their first home here in Sacramento. So they moved from Santa Clara here to Sacramento. Mm-hmm. By age 10, it was reported that he started exhibiting all three parts of the McDonald triad, what bedwetting, arson, and cruelty to animals. Yep. So basically the basic, you know, sugar, spice, and everything nice of a serial killer. So by age 12,
that's a weird way to phrase it. Okay. Okay.
Happy Halloween. That's going to be my excuse every time.
Right?
By age 12, his family issues started to escalate with his mother, and he was seen by two psychiatrists. By 13, the family lost the house that they had bought just 10 years prior entirely. Mm-hmm. Like, I mean, this guy was already didn't have a great home life, and then it just got worse and worse and worse. He went to high school at Mira Loma High and was arrested for pot possession by his sophomore year. So just bad situation. Just keep getting worse. By his adolescence, he was a pretty heavy drug user. He had a handful of girlfriends, but none of whom he was able to maintain a steady relationship with, partly due to his inability to achieve or maintain an erection in the presence of women. Mm-hmm. So he was like, like I said, there's a lot of things going on already.
Yeah, he's got
a psychologist
lot.
Determined that the root of his problems were either repressed rage or mental illness, or probably both.
Yeah.
Chase did not seek treatment after his diagnosis, and it would later be determined that Chase had an aversion to conventional sex and could only achieve arousal or orgasm through violent or disturbed acts, which, oh boy.
Yeah, that's not good. That's, yeah.
Ugh. Boy. Oy. From age 18 to 21, he was enrolled in American River College and maintained a C average, but was consistently seen by a psychiatrist. As he matured, he developed hypochondria and often complained his heart would stop beating or that someone had stolen his pulmonary artery. Romantic.
How does one steal a pulmonary artery?
Just go right, or what's the second one? Temple of Doom?
Kali Ma.
Oh, Kali Ma. The last
Grand
last
Theft
Crusade.
Artery.
Grand Theft Artery. Oh, God. We gonna get dark, guys. This is gonna make us real uncomfortable.
I'm already uncomfortable.
This guy would also, he would hold oranges to his head, believing that vitamin C could be absorbed by his brain through diffusion. Science, guys. It doesn't, it's only weird if it doesn't work, and apparently it doesn't work, so it's probably weird.
Okay.
Then he also shaved his head, claiming that his cranial bones had become separated and were moving around like tectonic plates. So his, like, brain was, ooh, can you imagine? That's kind of a creepy...
Yeah, especially since like the cranial bones aren't completely connected.
Yeah.
You know, and they're even, you know, they can move around like that, but not to the extent that I'm sure he thought they were, but.
Exactly. No volcanoes in the skull.
So he thought they were separating enough that his brain was oozing out the cracks.
Basically. Yeah. Ugh, so
gross.
Not a healthy individual.
No, definitely not.
In college, he moved in with some friends. He had some friends in an apartment. And after he claimed his mother was trying to poison him, so he was told them, like, guys, you're trying to poison me. Like, let me join you guys.
Yes, I remember his friends. I forgot that he had friends, but yes, I remember.
So I don't know where he got these people, but they didn't do very, they weren't exactly friends. I think they were just kind of like, this guy kind of joined us. I mean, it was the 70s, so.
Right. Free love.
They frequently complained that he was constantly drunk or high on pot or LSD, and he frequently walked naked in the apartment, even with people around. I mean, come on.
Free
love. What's wrong with that,
right?
Free
love.
They demanded that he moved out, but he didn't, so they did. Once he was alone in the apartment, that's when it's like, he just falls off. Now that he's alone, he is on his own.
He has nobody to check him, and his mental illness just kind of... really takes flight.
He starts to capture, kill, and disembowel various animals, which he would then devour raw, sometimes mixing the organs with Coca-Cola in the blender and drinking the concoction. He believed this practice kept his heart from shrinking, and he believed that if he didn't keep this up, his heart would disappear and he would just die. He was like, if I don't do this, like, oh man, whoo. This was also around the time that Chase's parents separated, and by 22, they finalized their divorce, and he maintained a relationship with both of them. By age 23, he was briefly institutionalized in a psychiatric ward for unknown reasons, but I can venture a guess. 3 years later, in 1976, he was committed to a mental institution after he was rushed to a hospital with blood poisoning after injecting rabbit's blood directly into his veins.
Oh, ew.
He was given the nickname Dracula by staff there because of his obsession with blood.
Right.
Woo.
So gross.
He was even known to catch birds through the window, rip off their heads, and drink the blood. And he would also draw blood from therapy dogs using stolen syringes.
How did he manage to catch birds through the bar window? I mean, that's some Disney princess level stuff. You know, like, but
maybe
like,
he's a beautiful singing
but
voice.
Like, psychopathic Disney princess. You know,
yeah.
It's like he lifts his hand out the window and whistles some song about, you know, cleaning the house and then snatches the birds and eats them. Just
hanging out the window
and
like
pulls like an Ozzy Osbourne, you know,
yeah.
Like,
woo.
Okay.
So he, from this stay, Slaughterella was diagnosed with paranoid. He's diagnosed as schizophrenic. And after a battery of treatments involving psychotropic drugs, yeah, LSD worked so well, guys. he was deemed no longer a danger to society and was released back into his mother's care later that year. We're like, mm-hmm. Yeah, he's good. He's fine. Yeah, sure.
Yeah, we doped him up enough that he's not going to, you know, be a problem.
He's definitely not a sociopath enough to pretend that he's fine until he can get out of the institution and then go back to doing what he was doing.
Dude, sociopathy, honestly, it terrifies me because it's like they can't feel emotions like a normal person can, but they can mimic emotions and and basically they are able to read people around them and they're able to change their behavior to kind of give you what you want. You know,
exactly.
They basically tell you what you want to hear, you know, and they always know that. And it's
exactly that's the
so
thing they know.
Creepy. They know what they're doing, you know, and they know that they're able to completely manipulate everybody around them. It's absolutely terrifying.
Well, speaking of people who know what they're doing, his mother clearly didn't, because she decided that he didn't need the meds anymore. She's like, you know these things are poisoning you. You don't need that anymore.
Yeah, she thought she was like the original anti-vaxxer. So
exactly,
you know, these pills are just causing autism. We're gonna take you off of them.
She weaned him off of all of his medication and got him another new apartment, this time off of Watt Avenue, which is like an exit up from my house.
Yes. Yes, it is.
With more friends. I don't know where he keeps finding these friends.
I'll bet the mother's
tells,
hiring them.
Maybe. Maybe
we're not necessarily
friends.
Hiring, but, you know, just, you know, like she's the one that meets with them when – because, you know, I'm sure that they probably had like a looking for roommate ad up in like the local paper or something.
Exactly.
And she probably went and met with them and was like, hey, my son needs a place and I'm going to withhold all sorts of information about him. But he's a nice young man. Why don't you let him move in with you? So when they say friends, that's kind of what I'm assuming is they aren't actual friends. They're just people that the mother kind of like coerced into taking in her son so she didn't have to deal with him.
Pretty much. So, sure enough, they eventually left too, leaving Chase alone again.
Mm-hmm. How does he pay rent? Like, how is he paying the rent?
They never really talk about a job. I think his parents buy it. His parents, he doesn't really pay for rent. His parents are wealthy. But then how'd they lose their house?
I don't know. All I know is maybe. All I know is like every time that it's like, hey, he's living in this apartment alone. And it's not like he's there for just a couple of days. It's like he's there for a couple of months before things finally explode. And it's like, who? And he definitely doesn't have a job. I don't think he could hold one down. You
I
know,
don't know who would hire him.
I don't know who would hire him.
This guy's like covered in blood all the time.
Yeah. And he's drinking blood and Coca-Cola, you know?
You think tattoos are bad. I mean, this guy's just like sanguinella.
Yeah, right? So, I'm assuming that his parents must be paying rent. That's the only logical explanation.
It has to be. So while he was alone in this apartment, he would often, again, capture and devour a neighbor's pets and on at least one occasion called the owner to kiss and tell. He was like, hey, by the way, you're that pet that you love, I ate it. You know, it's no longer.
Gross.
Yeah, I know.
No.
Can you imagine?
No,
that,
I can't.
Don't want to.
I can't imagine. I don't want
don't
to
want
imagine.
To.
I'll hard pass on that one.
Exactly. So he developed a fascination with handguns where he bought tons of them and practiced with them obsessively.
And
he was
this
just
is
like Gun.
And this is the part of the podcast where we talk about how we need stricter gun control laws in this country.
We have, we can go down a road, but we only have so much time to talk. He also became obsessed with the Hillside Strangler. He believed the Strangler was also a victim of the UFO Nazi poisoning scheme that he believed was affecting him, too. He lost interest in caring for himself and neglected personal hygiene like showers, grooming, and brushing his teeth, and then stopped eating, dropping to a mere 145 pounds. And he was only about 5'11".
Like, I mean, I weigh about 140 pounds, and I'm about 5'7", so that's a 4-inch difference.
He's almost 6 feet tall.
I guess you would say 140 pounds for somebody almost 6 feet tall that's pretty skinny. So I guess probably, like, I would assume, like, average or good weight for 6 feet tall would be maybe, like, 170 or something like
that. If you see pictures of him, he is an emaciated man. He ends up getting really, really, really skinny.
Gross.
I mean, can you imagine that face in your window?
I don't. Once again, something I don't want to imagine, but now
I am.
It is Halloween. Yep.
Happy Halloween.
Happy Halloween.
So one day in 1977, he paid his mother a visit by ringing her doorbell and greeted her with a dead cat that he thrust in her face. I'm really sorry for you cat and animal lovers out there, but this next bit is just bizarre. He threw the cat to the ground, ripped it apart, screamed bloody murder while he rubbed its blood all over himself. Mom just calmly shut the door, went back inside, and not reporting the incident to a soul. Like, thanks, lady.
See,
like,
she's an enabler.
Yeah.
You know, like in the most, I don't know, like, it's not an enabler in the sense that she's, like, giving him the stuff to do it, but she's enabling him by not doing anything.
Exactly.
You know, like, and, like, she's the most, like, passive enabler I've ever heard of, where it's like,
exactly,
I know he's got problems, but I'm just going to pretend that he doesn't and ignore the problem completely. Take his meds away. He literally rips a pet to pieces on my doorstep while screaming bloody murder.
I don't know what to do with this.
Yeah, I'm not going to deal with this right now. Hard pass, exactly. And closes the door. It's
just
like
too much.
I guess. But I mean, it's like,
it
come
killed
on,
people,
lady.
So it's like, come on, lady. I mean, you know.
I feel like any rational person would look at this and say, this is building to something.
Mm-hmm. It doesn't sound like he's the most rational person. I bet he didn't come from rational people, and his dad was really abusive. So I imagine there was probably an even higher power that was controlling a lot of the decisions in that house.
That's fair.
So in mid-1977, he was stopped again and arrested on a reservation in the Pyramid Lake area of Nevada. He was naked, screaming, and covered in blood, and there was a bucket of blood found in his Ford Ranchero truck, which was stalled nearby in a sandbank. When he was questioned, he claimed the blood was his own that had leaked out of him, but the blood was later found to be a cow's, and no charges were filed. And they also never found the dead cow.
I thought I read somewhere that he didn't kill the cow. He just, like,
he just drained it.
Drained it. Ew. A lot of it. I don't know, but I could be wrong. I might just be making that up. I don't know.
If that wasn't freaky enough for you.
It wasn't.
I'm going to get into the murders now. So,
Oh, God. Okay.
So he was picked up in Pyramid Lake last time. Okay. So now we're still in 1977. This is late 1977, December 27th. He allegedly fired his handgun into the kitchen of a home in Sacramento. No one was injured, but he became an inspired man. So he was like, oh, that felt good. Let's see what else we can do with this thing.
Let's put these many, many guns that I have to use.
Yes. Which, oddly, small detail, but we'll get through the murders first.
Okay.
On December 29th, Chase killed his first known victim in a drive-by shooting, 51-year-old engineer and father of two, Ambrose Griffin. Griffin was helping his wife with the groceries when Chase drove by and killed him. They did not know each other. Mm-hmm. Griffin's son reported seeing a neighbor walking in the area with a rifle, but that was not found to be the murder weapon. However, the bullet in Griffin did match the bullet taken from the woman's home 2 days prior from the same .22 handgun.
Oh, boy.
So despite having all these guns, he seems to only like this .22 handgun. like, that's pretty much the only thing involved in this next couple of these murders. Mm-hmm. Around that same time on, let's see. So it was on January 11th, 1978, he asked his neighbor in his apartment complex for a cigarette and then forcibly restrained her until she gave him the entire pack. Like, it ain't worth it, girl. Ditch it. Like, good Lord. Take it, man. Just take it. 2 weeks later, he totally snaps. He attempted to enter the home of a woman, but because her doors were locked, he walked away. Chase later told detectives that he took locked doors as a sign he was not welcome, but an unlocked door was fair game. He's like, yeah, it's unlocked. I can walk in. Yeah, they didn't lock it.
And, that's kind of part of the lore of vampires, which we talked about last episode.
You have to be invited inside. So that's part of another.
You have to be invited inside.
Exactly. Ugh. While wandering around, he encountered a woman named Nancy Holden, whom he knew in high school, and asked for a ride. But disturbed by his appearance, she took off. Thanks, Nancy. He went down the street.
I'd run away, too, if I had to look at that thing.
Well,
so.
From there, he went down the street and broke into a home of a young married couple, but they came home and caught him as he went through their stuff. The husband beat him up pretty good, too, but he got away, and he had already relieved himself all over their infant's bed and clothing. So he, broke in, was going through their stuff, couple comes home, and they're like, what the hell are you doing in my house? Husband beats him up, but he'd already done a ton of damage.
Wait, he'd relieved himself all over the infant, so he pooped and peed all over the baby clothes and stuff?
Yes.
Gross.
Yes.
Wow.
Like, burn it. Burn all of it.
Just, just
like
gag
bed,
me.
Changing table, all like, ugh.
Oh, as if.
But he didn't stop there. He eventually found the home of 22-year-old Teresa Wallen and her husband David on Tioga Way. That's, across the freeway.
Yes. Yeah, that is right there. Also, you're really triangulating yourself.
I know, right? Maybe 10 minutes north of me with, a lot of stoplights. Holy cow.
Yeah.
Wallen was 3 months pregnant at the time. Teresa's husband, David, was at work, and she had left the door unlocked to take out the trash. Chase ambushed her and shot her 3 times, once in the hand, because she defended herself, and twice in the head with the same handgun that he used to kill Griffin a couple weeks before. He then dragged her body to the bedroom and had sexual intercourse with her while stabbing her repeatedly with a butcher knife. He removed multiple organs, cut off one of her nipples, and drank her blood. And he then stuffed dog feces from Wallen's yard down her throat before leaving.
I forgot about this.
What a gentleman.
What a psycho, obviously.
Obviously.
But, oh, my
Our
God.
Socio? Psycho?
I mean, I think he's probably a little bit of both. He's got a nice 50-50 split.
I mean, poor Teresa. Oh.
Ugh.
And, just while your husband's at work. Oh, God.
And, the thing about stabbing, even though she was already dead, stabbing is such an it's a very intimate crime.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
you're definitely very close to somebody.
Yeah. It's just, I don't know, it just takes so much more mental fortitude to actually stab somebody than it does to shoot somebody. Because when you shoot somebody, it's a lot more like, you just pull the trigger and you don't actually physically make contact with this person. Mm-hmm. Where it's stabbing actually takes the mental wherewithal to decide to make a stab. And it's not like it's easy to stab somebody. It's not like you're just cutting through melted butter. It takes a lot of force and effort. And for you to stab repeatedly, it really shows a snapping in the brain.
I really kind of glazed over what he did to her. There are some details that are just not necessary and stuff. But, you poor woman. I'm so sorry. But then 2 days later, on January 23rd, he bought 2 puppies from a neighbor. Whatever snapped in him before snapped back, because who could resist puppies? And he apologized to everyone, got his shit together, got a job, a stable apartment, a girlfriend, and they lived happily ever after on one big happy wolf pack. The end. Right?
No. I was like, where are you going with this? Because this is not right.
I just don't want to finish the story. It sucks.
That's completely fair. Hey, at least we can take solace in the fact that in my half of this episode, we're going to talk about his court cases and everything. So
I do have one more murder. I'm sorry.
Yeah, I know.
I know what's coming. January 27th, we have the last murder before he was caught, which also qualifies as a mass murder because he killed four people in one go.
I know.
Chase entered the home of 38-year-old Evelyn Maroth, who was watching her 6-year-old son James and 22-month-old nephew David. But she was in the bath, and before he could make his move, he encountered her friend, 51-year-old Danny Meredith, who was there helping her watch the kids. You know, because I want to take a bath, like, while I watch the kids. I guess that makes sense. You know, we talked about that. Chase shot him with the same .22-caliber handgun and then took his wallet and his car keys. Mm-hmm. James tried to run, the little boy tried to run to his mom's bedroom to hide, but Chase shot him twice in the head, point blank, shooting little David in the head as he went to.
Oh my God.
The little one. So both of them. He was just like, ugh. He entered the bathroom and shot and killed Maroth before mutilating her and engaging in necrophilia again and cannibalism with her corpse. Ugh. He then dragged her to the bedroom where he sodomized her corpse and simultaneously drank the blood from incisions at the back of her neck. Gross. Medical examiners also suggested that he did this to completion multiple times. I could go on about what he did to her, but it's like I said, it's not necessary. You get the picture.
I more than get the picture.
When he took little David into the bathroom, he split open his skull and consumed some of his brain.
Oh, boy.
A 6-year-old visitor with a play date with James knocked on the door, though, and startled him. And he fled in Meredith's car, taking Ferreira's body with him.
Yep.
The girl alerted a neighbor who called police, and they discovered Chase had left perfect handprints and shoe prints in Maroth's blood. This guy just does not care about what he is. I don't think he really has any, like, idea what is going on. Yeah. After he was arrested, when the police searched his apartment, they found the walls, floor, ceiling, refrigerator, and all of his eating and drinking utensils were soaked in blood.
Yep.
He had also taken little David's body back to his apartment where he consumed his organs and eventually dropped him off at a church, but he wasn't found until 2 months after Chase was arrested.
Oh, God.
Yeah. In front of a church. So that's what I kind of have to say about what this guy did. Please tell me the justice. Give me the justice juice.
Okay. Well, when we come back from our break, because I think we all need a bit of a breather.
Sorry, guys.
When we come back from our break, I will talk about his apprehension and trials and the conclusion of this horrific event. So
happy
Halloween. Bonus episode. We'll be right back.
Bonus episode.
Well, we back.
We back. Now I'm ready for that. Ready for the justice juice.
All right. So to kind of do a little recap of like the apprehension part. So while Chase was finishing up with the murder of the Maroths and Dan Meredith, a 6-year-old girl from like next door had a play date with Jason Maroth knocked on the door that startled Chase. And he fled the house, stealing Meredith's car to get away. That 6-year-old girl had the presence of mind to know something was wrong and go to a neighbor and alert them to call the police. Like, I don't know. Like, to me, that sounds like a very smart 6-year-old to, you know. I mean, it's like, you know, they might just... I don't know. Like, what I just think about when I was 6, I don't think I would have had the presence of mind to be like, oh, somebody call the police. It's just somebody got in a car and sped off. Okay.
It was the 70s, so she may have had a little different,
upbringing,
I think, maybe in Sacramento, that there was more of a, like, go get some help because the guy, or she, like, because she alerted some neighbors, too, so maybe the neighbors were like, oh, we need to call the police, like, now.
Yeah.
But she at least knew enough to know something was so wrong.
She went and told the neighbor. So, good on her.
Mm-hmm.
So the neighbor then broke into the Maroth home where he discovered the bodies and contacted the authorities. You mentioned that the police apprehended him after they, you know, broke into his apartment and everything. So his trial began on January 2nd of 1979, where he stood for 6 counts of first degree murder. The defense counsel tried to fight for Chase to be found guilty of second degree murder so that he would avoid the death penalty and only result in a life sentence. The case was based on...
because people like that need a chance to be free, right?
Right? Right.
What?
Well, they were trying to plea that he was insanity, yeah. Like plea insanity. And their case was based on his long history of mental illness and the fact that his crimes lacked planning, which evidenced that they weren't premeditated. So by saying that, you know, these weren't planned attacks, they can, you know, say that this is just insanity. He had a mental illness. And it's like, instead of getting the death penalty, he wouldn't really be free. He would probably still get a life sentence, but it would be a life sentence in like a psychiatric hospital versus prison. So the prosecution, however, argued that Chase had made a cognitive choice and mentioned several times that Chase had brought rubber gloves with him to the victim's homes, showing that he did have intent to murder. So he may not have exactly planned what he was going to do exactly, but he did go in with intent to kill because
that's funny. He didn't even use them though,
but he didn't use them. Yeah. So, altogether there were 250 prosecution exhibits, of which the strongest were Chase's gun and Dan Meredith's wallet, which had been found in Chase's pocket. At one point, Chase took the stand in his own defense. He'd lost a lot of weight and was currently only 107 pounds. So he's even lighter than he was before. Because you mentioned he was 145.
Mm-hmm.
So he's gone down, you know, almost
another 40 pounds,
you know.
Another third, almost third of his body weight.
Yeah. Oof. So it's like he's 107 pounds, 5'11", almost 6 feet tall. I mean, he probably looks like a walking skeleton. So they said his eyes were sunken in and he just looked awful. I'm sure he looked like death. He claimed that during the Wallens murder, he was only semi-conscious and went on to explain that he'd been mistreated most of his life, you know, which like, oh, you poor, poor thing. You know, you were mistreated. That totally is okay for you to go ahead and do this. Like,
excuse to do that.
There are plenty of there are plenty of people who are very mistreated in their childhood and they don't end up, you know, going on a murder spree and killing six people, including a 6-year-old child.
Exactly.
So, you know, I don't have
an infant,
any
like
sympathy.
Several month old
right.
infant.
Yeah. I have zero sympathy for you being mistreated, and that is not an excuse. Correlation does not equal causation.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know where I heard that term before, but it's very fitting and I'm going to use it. He also admitted to drinking Wallen's blood. He claimed that although he did not recall much about the second series of murders, he knew that he had shot the baby in the head and decapitated it, leaving it in a bucket in hopes of getting more of its blood. So he was very aware of that. Like he says that he was semi-conscious, but he was aware that he did that.
It's like he's aware that he knows he's doing it. He just doesn't understand that it's wrong, that it's
well,
bad.
And that's the problem with most sociopaths.
Yeah.
Is they don't...
Right from wrong.
Well, it's not even so much that they don't know right from wrong. It's they don't feel guilt or remorse for it.
Yeah, yeah.
You know? So he claims that he thought the baby was something other than a baby, but he didn't really elaborate on what. But he thought that it was something else. So maybe he thought it was an alien because he's definitely had some belief in the aliens before, mm-hmm. you know, maybe a demon or something. We don't know. But he just didn't think it was a real human baby. He then explained how he thought all of his problems stemmed from the fact that he was unable to have sex with girls as a teenager and that he was sorry for the killing. So first he blames his abuse as a child, which isn't an excuse. And then he blames, well, girls wouldn't have sex with me.
Oh, great.
So he's a, you know, nice guy, you know, TM. So
asterisk now we're a part of the podcast where we say women are not objects of your desire or.
Right. You know, like, it's not teenage girls' fault that they wouldn't have sex with you as a teenager.
Exactly. It's not my purpose in life to serve
that
you.
Is, no. And that's not, no. And that's not an excuse to go murder people, you know, so screw you, you misogynistic piece of crap.
Yeah.
But he did say he was sorry for the killings, but, you know, with sociopaths, they say things like that, but they don't necessarily have the emotion behind them. So was he really sorry? He was probably sorry he got caught.
Yeah, exactly. Wee.
In May... Or May 8th of 1979, I almost said 1879. I was like, oh, we just went back 100 years. May 8th of 1979, so 5 months later, after 5 hours. So his case lasted 5 months. And then on May 8th, after 5 hours of deliberation, 1 hour to find him legally sane and 4 hours to determine his sentence, the jury found him guilty on the original 6 counts of first degree murder. So, so basically the case lasted 5 whole months.
Wow.
And then the, yeah, I know. And I mean, it keeps going.
Yeah.
But, so the case lasted 5 months. And then on this date, the jury went in and deliberated for 5 hours. Five hours they were in there deliberating. And in the first hour, they were like, well, yeah, he's sane. He's not insane. So we're not going to give him the second degree murder counts. So, and then the other 4 hours they spent going, okay, so now we know that we're going to find him guilty for first degree murder. We need to agree on his sentence.
Wow.
So, his defense asked for a clemency hearing. Now I had to look up the word clemency and it just means like mercy. So like a mercy hearing.
Mm-hmm.
So basically like he throws himself on the mercy of the court, which I've seen in TV mm-hmm. dramas. I throw myself at the mercy of the court. So, however, the judge determined that Chase was not legally insane and he was sentenced to die in a gas chamber in San Quentin Penitentiary. So that was the sentencing. So he threw himself at the mercy
Thank
of the
God.
Court and the court said, nope.
Nope.
No, there is Mm-mm. no mercy for you. Go rot in hell.
Yeah.
Basically.
You're done. You're done.
You're done. So he went to prison, to await his sentence being carried out because it's never as simple as, hey, we sentence you to the death chamber and they take him out back and gas him.
Exactly. They got to wait and sit on the Green Mile for...
You know, they got to cut through all that red tape.
Yeah.
Which, you know, if you're going to give somebody the death penalty, I say just get it over with. I don't really... Like, at that point, you've gone through the case. You've made your sentence. You know what you're going to do. It's like, I don't see the point in waiting, but I mean...
There are the occasional off chance sometimes that people do end up on death row that were innocent, obviously.
And yeah, then,
in that
and
case,
I'd be happy
for the ability to appeal a case like that and have that time. But yeah, so,
and I suppose that's true. You know, they have to give time to appeal and double check all of their findings and everything. So,
which you would think that's kind of what the first trial's for, like get it right the first time. But you know,
I mean,
Humans
make mistakes, and you know, our justice system is
corrupt.
Far from perfect. Far from perfect. So, I mean, yeah, I guess I don't know. I just this case made me so angry, you know, because it was like with somebody like this, I don't see the point in dragging it out. Just take them out back. You know, but I understand why they don't. So, you know, I'm sorry, you know, if I get a little carried away. I'm just very emotional about this because it was just so horrific. And people like this.
This guy was clearly not a viable human.
No, they're beyond saving. You know, this guy is beyond saving. And I just don't see the point in keeping him around. But anyway, so he went to prison to await his sentence to be carried out. While he was in prison, he became feared among his fellow prisoners. So, I mean, and San Quentin is full of some of the biggest criminals in, like, on the West Coast.
Yeah.
Including some of the biggest criminals just in the country. San Quentin is a big, big, big prison for big name clients.
I'm going to look it up. Wasn't Manson held there?
I think so. I mean, Manson was another big West Coast criminal.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. So it's like San Quentin is where the big bads go. And the other prisoners were terrified of this guy.
You've got
even drug if I'm a lords. Criminal. You've got like drug lords, mafiosos, other murderers and serial killers there. And they're terrified of this guy.
Can you imagine? Because we've been throwing the book at people for like drug possession for a very long time. Can you imagine being on like death row for something like that? You've got the sack vampire sitting there and you're like, why? How is anything I did anywhere near what this guy did?
Yeah. I had like 2 kilos of cocaine on me, but I didn't, you know, murder an entire family and then
consume
rape
a baby
corpse and eat a baby, you know, so I don't know. So his reputation preceded him, and other inmates, including gang members, feared him due to the graphic and bizarre nature of his crimes. According to some prison officials, many inmates tried to convince Chase to commit suicide because they were too afraid to kill him themselves. These are people that, like, are known for killing people.
And they're like,
we're not going to do this.
Bad they're, juju.
Like I said, these are, like, drug lords and mafia people and other murderers. And
they took out Jimmy Hoffa, and they're like,
they are known
this guy
for killing people, and they're afraid to kill this killer. So they passed him notes. That's how they tried. Like, they would whisper to him through the cells and whisper to him at, like, lunch and stuff like that, and pass him notes and tell him to kill himself because they were too afraid to do it themselves.
Wow.
So it was, like, all, like, psychological. Like, they were like, we got to take him out, but we're not going to take him out ourselves. So we're just going to have to psychologically try to convince him to do it to himself.
Wow.
So, right? Absolutely blows my mind. So, during his time in prison, he also granted Robert Ressler, an FBI agent and author, a series of interviews where he not only confessed his fears of Nazis and UFOs, but claimed that although he had killed, it wasn't his fault. So once again, trying to pass the buck. Mm-hmm. You know, first it was his abusive parents, then it was, you know, teenage girls that wouldn't have sex with him, and now it's going to be aliens and Nazis.
Mm-hmm.
So, he believed that he had been forced to kill others in order to keep himself alive, which he believed anyone would do. I mean, that's debatable.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, definitely it is in human instinct to fight to stay alive. And some people, I wouldn't say that it's unnatural for some people to say, no, take them, not me. I think human, you know, just, you don't know.
It's either,
yeah, know, self-preservation, yeah. Fight or flight response. You never know how you're going to react in a situation like that. So, but he's saying that's the situation he was in, was that he was, they were saying, you know, you kill these people or we'll kill you. So like a Saw sort of situation, you know.
Ah, I saw that.
He wants to play a little game. I've actually never seen Saw.
I've never, first three.
I've never seesawed.
Never seesawed?
Seed saw.
I seed
anyway,
it.
I seen it. I'm trying to, like, make light of this topic because I can't. I can't even. Okay. He even went as far as to ask Ressler to give him access to a radar gun, which he believed he could use to apprehend the Nazi UFOs. So it's not just aliens. They're Nazi UFOs.
No.
So they're like UFOs that the Nazis got.
So they've got the bell. They got the German bell.
There you go. Hey. That's a flashback to season one.
Yeah.
So
go
yeah,
back and
the Nazi Dalek bell.
Yes.
So yeah. So he tried to get this FBI agent to give him a radar gun so that he could prove that there were cloaked Nazi UFOs flying around him. And you know, he figured, hey, we can apprehend them with this radar gun and make them stand trial for the murders instead.
Uh-huh.
So. At one point, and this was kind of funny, but in a sad kind of way, at one point he handed Ressler a large amount of macaroni and cheese that he'd been hoarding in his pants pocket to be analyzed because he believed that the prison officials were in league with the Nazis and aliens and were attempting to kill him.
It's funny. I was going to ask cooked, but I was like, was it straight up?
No, like he took the macaroni and cheese off his tray and shoved it into his pocket.
And was like, analyze this.
He was like, oh, by the way, can you analyze this macaroni and cheese to make sure that there's no poison in it? Because the Nazi alien prison officials are trying to poison me.
It ain't easy with being the macaroni. Cheesy.
Oh my God, I hate you.
I know. I got to break the ice somehow.
I know. It's just, it's so bad. It's so bad. Okay, so Chase claimed he was Jewish, which he wasn't, and that's why the Nazis were persecuting him because he had a Star of David on his forehead, which he didn't.
Ah.
Yeah.
Delusional. So Diary of a delusional man.
Right? So he claimed that he was a Jew with a Star of David, like, etched into his forehead. But you couldn't see it. He claimed that it was not visible to the human eye. So he claimed that the Nazis were connected to the UFOs, which telepathically commanded him to kill in order to replenish his blood. He said that the UFOs followed him around and that the radar gun would prove it. Yeah. Now, to get into the soap dish thing that you mentioned earlier, Chase told Ressler that he was a victim of what he called soap dish poisoning. He explained that everyone has a soap dish and that if you lift the dish and find it's dry underneath, that you're safe. However, if you find it's gooey underneath, you've been poisoned, and it turns your blood to powder, which then depletes your energy and eats away at your body, hence why he needed to consume blood to replenish his own. So,
just never wash your hands, I guess.
Because, I mean, I'm sorry, but that's just natural for soap to do. Yeah. It gets gooey underneath because the water trickles down underneath it and keeps that bar of soap nice and moist under there, and it gets gooey because that's what, you know.
That's what soap does. Although, you know, I'm thinking is, you know, I wonder if the kind of soap that we have now was newish around then, and that it was like this, like totally, like, you know, because even like toothpaste was powder for a long time. It wasn't in a tube. Yeah. So although that was probably even before. I mean, this is the 70s and stuff. So I'm trying to
Yeah, but I feel like bar soap has been around for a long time. Well, and yeah, it's always been kind of.
Does it gum made up? Because it was made with lard. Would it gum up the way it does now? I'm just saying maybe the soap that we had was a little bit different. I don't know.
I don't know. I mean, I'm pretty sure back in the 70s, people actually like washed their hands with lard and borax, you know? So it's like, I don't know what lard and borax does in a soap dish.
Exactly.
Now, I mean, I know that I'm probably just, you know, being over the top. I don't think people actually wash their hands with borax. But
I'm just trying
maybe
to find some kind of logic in this guy. I mean...
but yeah, so he claimed that the poison turned his blood to powder and he had to drink blood to replenish his blood, which I don't understand how ingesting blood would turn it into blood for your body, but you know, I don't know. He's a psycho. So anyway, that was his time in prison. Now we're going to get into his death.
Thank God.
Right? He does die in this story, guys, I promise. So at 11:05 on December 26th, 1980, one day short of the third anniversary of the killing spree. So, I mean, this was 3 years in prison, basically. Like, I mean, they caught him like very soon after the last killings.
Oh, yeah. You know, days.
And took him.
Oh, yeah.
And,
they knew.
Yeah,
they and followed the bloody footprints to exactly where he was, basically. And
yeah. So
car.
It's like, you know. It's between the, you know, 5 month court case and then the prison sentence waiting for the gas chamber. It's been 3 years. Mm-hmm. Now, once again, I don't know why it's taken that long. Like, I understand appeals and stuff like that, but it's been 3 years. You know, like, that's taxpayer money.
That's
to
a
just
long time,
keep this guy, like, to keep this guy on, you know, three hots and a cot.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, it's like that's a waste of taxpayer money. And it's like, it's not like they're going to convince anybody to let him out.
And within the state of California, which means that his victims were paying for his, like, with their tax dollars, paying for his comfort.
Yes. Ugh. Yeah. Now, I mean, granted, at this time, like, I don't know when the death penalty was outlawed in California, but it might have been around this time. So they might have been waiting to find out if that was going to go through or not. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Which at that point, he would just end up getting a life sentence in prison.
Yeah.
His sentence would immediately, like, transfer over to a life sentence in prison versus a death sentence. But anyway, so one day short of the third anniversary of his killing spree, 11:05 p.m., December 26, 1980, Chase was found by a guard doing routine checks, lying awkwardly on his bed and not breathing. Chase was on his stomach with both legs extended off his bunk and his feet were on the floor. His head was against the mattress and arms extended towards the pillow. The guard called out to Chase and got no response. The coroner, K.P. Holmes, searched the cell and located a strange suicide note about taking some pills. After being declared dead, an autopsy was performed, and it was found that he had committed suicide by overdosing on Sinequan, which was his prescribed antidepressants and anti-hallucinatory medicine that he'd been stockpiling over the course of several weeks. So he'd been hiding the pills under his tongue, and these were, you know, antipsychotics basically. So he'd been hiding weeks worth of pills and he OD'd on them.
Yeah.
And yeah, he died. So he is dead though. Whenever somebody like this commits suicide versus actually getting the death penalty, I always feel bad for the families because it doesn't really feel like they got justice. You know, like he kind of got out of it. He took the easy way out, I guess you could say. I don't know. It's just, it doesn't really feel like justice was served. But yeah, but on the other hand, he is gone. And yeah, at least there's that.
And there's nothing they can do about it at this point and stuff. And it's just kind of the way the story is going to play out. I was thinking that, there's a belief that I think is really interesting and kind of sort of fits in here. It's that, with the idea of reincarnation and that we have lived multiple lives over the timeline in different times, jumping around.
Okay.
And you're a version of me. I'm a version of you. We're all a version of this one kind of higher source. And we've lived these lives over and over and over again. But every time we start a new timeline, we don't remember the things that we learned previously. And that's why we have like deja vu or things that kind of seem a little familiar and stuff, because we've learned these lessons already. We just have to learn them again. And the point of life is to mature. So what if, in the case of Mr. Chase, he is an amalgamation of a couple different storylines that just kind of funneled into one timeline. And that's why there's like the Nazis, the aliens, the like so many different possibilities, like just got wedged into this one person,
right?
And it, like, didn't know where to go, and resulting in this bizarre personality disorder. But I mean, just kind of coming up with right, creative ways that reasons, people can be.
But I mean, you
insane.
Also have to think about, like, he was a product of his time, because during the 70s, there was a big neo-Nazi.
I'm going supernatural. We got a supernatural podcast.
We do. But you do have to remember that during the 70s, there was a big neo-Nazi uprising. Also during the 70s is when UFOs and aliens and everything really, like,
popular.
I mean, it started in the 50s with like Project Blue Book, but really got a lot more popularity in the 70s, and there were a lot of sightings and things like that in the 70s. So he was also a product of his time. It was just, there was a lot wrong with him. And on one hand, you kind of feel bad because he obviously has mental illness, but on the other hand, you don't, because he knew what he was doing. And it's people like this. I have such mixed feelings over, like, I don't sympathize with them, and I don't feel like, they're justified at all, and I'm not trying to say anything good about them. But on the other hand, you do have to look at, this was a very, very sick person, and he, you wonder what would have happened if he'd gotten the help he needed from a younger age. You know, like, would he have been okay? Could have this all have been avoided, had he just stayed on that medication that his mom weaned him off of, So I don't know. It's like I said, I feel bad from the standpoint of mental illness is a very big problem that still isn't taken very seriously these days. But on the other hand, I don't feel bad because he murdered six people.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Brutally, very brutally.
Very brutally.
But, but it's really, like you said, it's not necessarily always entirely the fault of the individual. It's the support system that that nurtures that person. And unfortunately, we can't save everybody, which sucks that that affects everybody around us. But that's why we need to look out for each other. And if we, see a friend struggling, rather than moving out because he's covering himself in blood and making rodent and Coca-Cola cocktails, maybe we call them some help instead of, leaving.
Like just disappearing and pretending it never happened. No,
yeah,
like,
exactly.
Mental illness is a very, very serious thing. And we all need to be looking out for each other, And like I said, for it to be 2019 and we're still not taking mental illness seriously, that's a problem. It's a disease just like any other sort of disease, just like the flu or chicken pox. It's a disease of organ in your body and mm-hmm. it needs to be Absolutely. Taken seriously. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So,
yeah.
But anyway, right. so well, that was our horribly morbid and morose topic yes. for Halloween. We hope we've scared the crap out of you and that you'll come
we
back tomorrow.
Listened and ate your candy with us. And that's what we should have been doing. We should have been eating candy this entire time.
Oh my God. Yes.
But we hope you guys have a great Halloween and we hope you guys enjoyed this. Don't ask. We're not going to become a true crime podcast.
No.
We did not enjoy this.
No, we did not. Like, I like listening to true crime podcasts. I do not want to host my own. I don't no. mind being on one from time to time or talking about this sort of thing once in a while,
exactly.
but I can't do this full time. I just can't.
Exactly.
I
Let's
don't
go
have
back
the
to
mental
conspiracies.
Faculties. Well, we'll go right back to it tomorrow because tomorrow is November 1st and you'll get a normal episode. So you
can hear my silent maracas.
Your silent maracas. So yeah, tune back in tomorrow and you can cleanse your palate of this horrible, horrible thing that we've discussed.
Exactly.
So thank you guys again for listening. We really appreciate all of the support that you guys give us. And, you know, and we appreciate everything you guys do for us. So
keep telling your friends, keep spreading the word, keep showing us. You guys are doing an awesome, 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 awesome job. Seriously. Mm-hmm. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you.
And don't forget, Big Brother is watching.
Thank you so much for joining us for another episode of Conspiracies and Cryptids with Sammy and Tessa. Don't forget to check out our website, www.conspiriesandcryptids.com, for more episodes and other information.
And if you're really enjoying what we're doing, check out our Patreon at patreon.com/cryptipod. That's CRYPTIPOD. There you can find different ways to support us and get some awesome goodies along the way.
While you're at it, you can also find us on all of your favorite social media platforms like Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. That's any one of those at Cryptopod.
And if you're enjoying our podcast, please think about leaving us a 5-star review on iTunes. Leave us 5 stars and a nice little blurb about why you like us. It helps us to gain some traction and find some new listeners.
And while you're at it, don't forget to tell your friends, because our friends are your friends.
And don't forget, Big Brother is watching.